shines in me. There's a light in me. There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me. There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me.
Holy One that come from peace.
There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me.
Oh, come to tell us we are free.
There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me.
Come on now, won't let it be.
There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me. There's a light that shines in me. There's a light in me.
Oh. Shine. Shine.
Welcome to One Love Center Presents. And we know that there is a light that shines in me, the light that shines in you. It's the same light. Welcome, peace and blessings. My name is Rodney Gittins. And again, welcome to One Love Center Presents. That song that you're listening to, There's a Light That Shines in Me, is an awesome song by Eric Peterson, wonderful composer, musician, and all-around great guy as well. As I couldn't say enough about him, but he is the composer of that album, of that song, There's a Light That Shines in Me. I believe it's from the album Always the Season, Eric Peterson. And he has been a Agape musician, and he might show up and play with them every now and again. That's Agape International Center of Truth out in Los Angeles. And he is on many of their older compilations or older songs. Anyway, you're listening to One Love Center Presents. Once again, my name is Rodney Gittins. I am your host, and my co-host, Hajar Rahim, will be with us shortly, as well as our visiting contributor, Reverend Moata Rasuli, and, of course, you. And we thank you for being with us. One Love Center Presents. Today, as we have been for all of these previous shows, we're talking about The Power of Now. This is a book study of The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And it's a wonderful opportunity for us to dive in with our own personal experiences, our understandings, insights on The Power of Now, the book, and on The Power of Now in our lives. So, of course, you are most welcome to contribute. We do have a chat room online, or you can feel free to call in. And in case you don't have the number handy, the number is 347-996-5991. The call-in number again is 347-996-5991. So, once again, we're so glad that you are tuning in and listening in, and really appreciate your love, because surely it's love that you have for yourself and a love that you have for us in participating in your listening. So, just a little background information. One Love Center is a Brooklyn teaching chapter. We are a member of Centers for Spiritual Living, which is now based in Golden, Colorado. So we are One Love Center, and we say welcome to a place where love grows. We are lovingly created as a community of fellowship, meditation, prayer, sacred service, spirituality, supported healing service, and spiritual speakers. We have musical transformances, study workshops, and spiritual films. I am the spiritual director, founder and spiritual director. Once again, my name is Rodney Gittins, and I'm a religious science practitioner. And my co-host is Hajra Rahim, and she is the assistant spiritual director. We meet on Sundays, the first and third Sunday of every month. And we meet at 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn, New York. That's area code 11236. It's, relatively speaking, downtown Brooklyn. It's in a venue called the Village at Garege, Renate Albertson Martin Gallery. It's a gallery, among other things. It's a wonderful performance space, a wonderful gallery space, a wonderful space for our Sunday celebrations and other activities that we're up to. So once again, you're most welcome. All are welcome. We truly do honor all paths to God, and you are most certainly welcome. Once again, this is first and third Sunday of every month at 11:30 a.m. It is our mission to provide a stable and welcoming community for all who choose to practice and grow, play and unfold their understanding of spiritual principle and spiritual living. And that's why we're here today. That's why we have been covering this particular book, The Power of Now, so that we can get a deeper understanding of what spiritual living is. And most certainly, one aspect of spiritual living is living in the now and accessing the power of now in our everyday lives. I should say everyday activities. I think it is most challenging for us to be centered in the now. And I say that because many of us are raised up to have one foot in the past and one foot in the future, either lamenting or complaining or griping or feeling resentment or anything over what's already happened, crying over spilt milk, or maybe rejoicing over past successes, which is not necessarily a bad thing. However, it's past. We still get to move on. And many of us are continually trying to relive past glories. We're reliving past glories without an eye in the present or even an eye to the future, which may not always seem like a bad thing, an eye in the future. However, many times we are so far in the future that we're not living in the present moment. When I get there, when I get the money, when I have this, when I no longer have that, then I will. And living in the future disempowers us in the present moment, so much so that that the future that we think we're going to get, that we really want to have, is not going to appear because we haven't grounded ourselves or moved in the direction of the future. We haven't put anything into effect to land us into what that future moment might look like. Now, it's not everybody. There are wonderful practices and opportunities and things that we can do toward the future. We have workshops and classes, and we can gain information and knowledge and into practice make it wisdom. But what we find is that all of that means nothing if not at every moment we are in the now. We are constantly releasing the past. And I must say there's a whole lot of unlearning as well that needs to occur, because sometimes we want to amass so much information. We want to get so much that I think there's a quote that says, with all thy getting, get thee understanding. And I know for myself, and maybe with you listening, you can identify that sometimes getting understanding means letting go of what I think I know. Sometimes what I think I know doesn't lead to any greater understanding. As a matter of fact, a lot of times what I think I know kind of deludes me and kind of overshadows and puts a blinder or a veil on the truth, on the real understanding in each now moment. That's what I call a nowment, just a now moment, nowment. I really see that as a constantly occurring. I mean, and it's we can't even measure what now looks like, because it's always happening. Every moment is now. Every moment is a now moment. So there's no way we can actually not be in the now. Of course, we can think our way or believe that we are not in the now, but we're always in the now moment. However, we are totally disempowered by thinking otherwise and acting otherwise. Therefore, we are believing in more in the future. We're believing more in the past. So the one saying that is a double-edged sword is the good old days. Well, it's a matter of perspective, I think. Good old days. Good old days can change from moment to moment, whatever my particular memory of those good old days were. There were some good old days that maybe half the day was good and half the day did not seem good. However, my wonderful selective memory would have me only remember the good part, the part where things seemed to work out in my favor. Maybe it was a day I didn't get a spanking. Boy, that was a good old day. There were some days where there weren't many good old days. In other words, some days that I got a lot of spankings. And so it's purely our perception of each moment and what we determine that we're going to judge what is good, maybe what is repeatable. At this time, I'm going to invite our co-host, Hajra Rahim. So I invite Hajra to say hello.
Yes, you can. How are you? And how is
everybody?
Hey,
greetings. Welcome. And let everybody know who you are and all of that good stuff.
Oh, you want me to introduce myself? Well, my name is Hajra Rahim. I'm a licensed spiritual practitioner with the Center for Spiritual Living, and I'm soon, in fact, in the next couple of weeks, going to California to take my final panels for my ministerial license. And I am the associate or the co-director of One Love Center with Rodney Gittin, who's our host now. You make a fine pair, I think.
And welcome aboard tonight. Glad that you could be here.
Me
so
too.
I was in a little discourse about the power of now in general, and I'd like
right.
to let everybody know that we're focusing on Chapter 9. We're somewhat maybe halfway through.
Uh-huh.
Talking about what we perceive as good or bad, but basically the end of your life drama. And we're going to move right into this area, which is on the hardcover book of The Power of Now, page 150.
Right.
Well, just to backtrack and do a little summary, we talked about Chapter 9 starts off talking about basically beyond happiness and unhappiness there is peace.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have to do? We have to start allowing things to be as they are.
Right.
Okay, so we're not judging and labeling what things happen in our lives as good or bad, but it just is. And when we
right.
get to an aspect of that, we find that we can have inner peace, because when our thoughts become things, you know, we know that thoughts are things, but when they become manifested as our reality or what seems to be reality, we realize that it's only dependent upon what we have labeled it, what we have encouraged that thought to be. I remember growing up, lima beans were bad.
Me too.
Lima beans were bad. They tasted bad. They smelled bad. And that was it. So I had a bad experience when, of course, that which I focused on the most of what I didn't want would appear on my plate, yet was bad.
Yeah.
I was using the law. I was using the law, rightfully so, focusing on what I did not want, and that's what showed up on my plate.
Exactly.
Didn't know I was using the law at that time.
Uh-huh.
Law of attraction, the law of not so much attraction, but I mean, basically is as a man thinketh or as a kid thinketh, so shall it appear.
Right.
I wish I had known what I was doing. I could have had that bike and a pony, you know, and, you know.
Well, I think as kids, because I know for myself as a child, you know, we have just an innate thought about the power of our thoughts, and I know I had them. And I thought I had magic in my thoughts, and some things seemed like they would happen and some things not. And I couldn't understand what the difference was when I could think of something really hard and get it, and then I could think of something else really hard and it wouldn't happen. And I didn't understand the laws or the principles of thought until I came into religious science, where now it makes sense why some things I got, some things I didn't. But, yeah, that power of thought is always there. It's always with us, and we judge it as good or bad or indifferent. But it's always manifesting.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And before we move on, I think the biggest question that he asks in this section is, can I pretend that something isn't bad? Why deny it? Speaking about the pain of experiencing something so-called labeled dreadful. And the answer is, you're not pretending anything. You know, we are going to experience feelings. And he says, remember, we're not talking about happiness here. When a loved one has just died or you feel your own death approaching, you cannot be happy. It is impossible. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there might be people who are in so much pain that death might be a happy release for them. So I don't know if that's a... a statement I would always agree with. However, he said, you can be at peace. There may be sadness and tears, provided you relinquish resistance. Underneath the sadness, you will find a deep serenity, stillness, and sacred presence. He says,
right.
Basically what we have to do is accept what is. And I think that's that for most of us on the planet, we are taught to make something out of it.
Right.
Whatever happens, we have to give it a name, we have to label it, and we have to hold that that is true.
Right.
And most of the time, that's not allowing any other possibility to exist. It's like, I've made up my mind, that's who you are, and that's who you'll be forever in my mind, etched in my mind. I'm going to hold
right.
you to that, you know? And maybe we don't preface it that way. However, we treat people that way, and we treat ourselves that way. That's just who
right.
I am.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I'll always be.
Well, you know, you can really see that when you go to, as a child, you know, you had your aunts and aunties and your uncles and your older cousins and all those people who saw you as a child. And then when you move away and come back again, they still see you as that little boy, that little girl, when you are a fully grown adult, you know. But, you know, like Mama says, you always will be my baby, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so
yes.
our social circles and a lot of times keep us locked into that concept they had of us as children. And now that we are grown adults with children of our own, some of them still treat us like we're still little kids. And I've witnessed that and seen that many times. So just
yeah.
like we want to evolve out of, you know, the concept of their mind that we're still a child, you know, we are an adult, we also can evolve out of labeling things as good or bad. They just are. They may not necessarily be all that pleasant, but they are, and as we can accept that, and if it's something that's really unpleasant, you know, practice forgiveness and compassion and empathy and all those other things to put yourself in that other particular person's shoes to see how it feels from the other side, you know. A lot of times we feel like somebody did something to us or this happened to me, but in essence, you know, people are really thinking about themselves, and you are kind of, in a sense, inconsequential to the big scheme of things in their lives. And as we become more and more conscious, then we have a broader scope that we can look at, well, what am I doing and how is that going to impact others? But that's a level of maturity, emotional and spiritual maturity when you start to look at it that way, because kids, all we know is me and mine, and that's it.
Well, you know, and it's understandably so. I mean, because we are pretty much the creators of our own world, and everything and everybody seems to exist in our world. It's my world,
right.
and you
right.
are only a player in my world. And when we
right.
come from that aspect, and it's kind of hard not to, you know, and I have to admit, as evolved as I might think that I am, you know, everything is still coming from my perspective. Even,
right.
even if I... in my most highest moment, will think, what is the highest and the best for that person? That's not
uh-huh.
a question I get to ask myself.
Uh-huh.
It's only always going to be from my perspective. You know.
Right.
So on page 150, when Eckhart Tolle talks about the end of your life drama, he says most of the so-called bad things that happen in people's lives are due to unconsciousness. They are self-created, or rather ego-created. And he calls it drama, and I certainly do. And you know, and I have a coworker, and I kind of hope she doesn't listen to this particular show. But but she know I would say it to her and to many of my coworkers, and myself included. We create our own drama. And you have a situation, and it's only something that occurs. What happens
right.
next? And I see what occurs. And I have the luxury of sitting back and watching everything. I'm not going to be the first to jump in and have a say, or, you know, that my way is going to be the right way and this is what should happen. So I afford myself the luxury of sitting back and watching people jockeying for position. Maybe their voices are getting louder about how to handle this situation. And then it gets personal. Well, you always do this, and you shouldn't do that, and who do you think you are, and you're not the boss, and all this stuff, this drama starts coming up where everybody's playing the boss, but pointing at the other person to not be the boss, and though, although none of us are the boss, you know. So it gets to be really quite a show. And even today, my friend took a particular stance of not contributing to the drama. And it was awesome to watch. And at the end of the day, she came to me to let me know how good she was about not getting involved in all that drama. And I thought that was great, even though from my standpoint, she was involved, but not as much as she normally would be. And that was great. And she knows about The Power of Now, about this book. And we talk about it, and she gets very, very enthusiastic, and she's very can be very excitable, and will not and when it talks about the unconsciousness, I currently sit behind her, so when I pass by and I can see the look in her eyes. And I can see that she's operating from a level of unconsciousness. And I bring it to her attention. She'll first have major resistance, of which at that point I'll leave her alone. And then she'll come to me after a little while and say thank you for kind of snapping her out of it. And becoming conscious to where she finds herself to be going.
Right.
And she's able to pull herself back.
Right.
And so I get to see that, and I have to admit that I get to see how it comes up for myself also, because as I'm sitting and observing, I find that I can fall into judgment, blame, criticism, most easily complaint, because complaint doesn't, you know, in and of itself. Does not seem harmful. It seems like an observation, and it is. However, it's observation laced with judgment.
Right.
In other words, somebody's not doing the right thing, and I'm the one that gets to label it. You know, I get to be the one to discover it. Hey, you know, you're not doing the right thing. You're doing it wrong. That's not right. What's wrong with you people? And even though I may not be saying it out loud, I hear myself saying it. And so today, and by my desk, I created a sign that said that had complaints and one of those big sign with the circle and a slash through it.
Right, yeah.
So it'd be no complaints.
Yeah.
But I found today I had to alter that. I had to add a couple more words, a few more words.
Okay.
So I now have the sign that says, I have, and it looks like it's I have complaint, but it's I have, and then the big slash, no complaint. And I do that for myself. And if anybody else sees it, well, I hope it works for them.
Right.
However, it's really important for me, and it's a place where I have to see it. So I can't not see it.
Just to be reminded, yes. Well, you know, in Seattle, Kathy Ann, you know, we have our four C rules, no complaining, no comparison, no competition, and I can't think of the fourth C, but there were the four C's. And the no complaining, she said, it's not that you can't point out that something needs to be fixed, because there are things that need to be fixed.
Uh-huh.
But you go to the person who has the power to fix it, not talk about it all around everywhere else, everybody else who don't know, who don't have any power to do anything about it.
Right.
And so you go into a solution mode rather than a problem-finding mode. You go into a solution mode. Well, this toilet paper is empty, so where do I go to get it filled, you know? Rather than going around complaining, oh, my God, they didn't have any toilet paper in the toilet room, in the bathroom, you know?
Uh-huh.
You go to somebody who can do something about it. So you're not complaining. You're pointing out a situation that could be fixed, but you have to point it out to the right person or the proper authorities or whatever like that, rather than just spreading the heart, the discontent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And all that, so and the difference really is, like, as you've been mentioning, is the ego. Now, the ego may or may not want to bring it to the person's attention who can do something about it, because then the
right.
complaint may not, you know,
that
may not have the that false sense of power that it has,
right.
unless the person is bringing it in an ego kind of way that says, hey,
mm-hmm.
look what I discovered, you know, you better do something about that, you know.
Right. Right.
And that might still create some drama. However, as long as the point gets through. And so he says, some of the ego's strategies are extremely clever, yet they never truly solve any of its problems, simply because the ego itself is a problem.
Uh-huh.
And that is just so important that we get to recognize that. And he goes on to say, when egos come together, and we mentioned this last time we were together, whether in personal relationships or in organizations or institutions, bad things happen sooner or later. Drama of one kind or another, in the form of conflict, problems, power struggles, emotional or physical violence, and so on. And I really say that also includes war between countries. When the
yeah.
egos of the politicians and the leaders come together, that's pretty much how war starts.
Well,
now,
like,
most of the time, it's the people themselves are not the ones who are picking up arms against one another. They're being led or duped. Or, you know, they're being told, you have to fight this enemy. Most of the time, you know, the people are living in harmony. You know,
well,
as you...
Clear during the Bush administration after 9/11, you know, he worked up the fever about the enemy and the Taliban and Osama bin Laden deployed all these soldiers over there to kill people, you know?
Well,
It was crazy.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but I was watching the news at the time, and Colin Powell came on TV and said, you know, yes, this is what happened, and we don't know who they are yet. As soon as we do, we'll let you know, and we don't want to take any rash actions, something along those lines. And then it went to commercial. And when it came back, he was standing in the background. President Bush was in the forefront saying, we know who the enemy is, and we're going to get them. And
right.
that was a, you know, and you can just see, they, you can almost see a muzzle around Colin Powell's head, you know. They silenced him. He was out of the picture from that point on.
Right.
And it was Bush and Condoleezza Rice, and we knew who the enemy was, and that created a lot of drama around the country, singling out people, of course. Well, I don't want this to get into a whole political thing. But, you know, but yeah, that's when it could have been handled a very different way without the drama and
without
the ego.
Without the ego. The ego was totally, totally in charge. You could see the ego totally in charge at that point. I mean, if anybody has any reservations about that, just go back and look at it. The ego is just jumping out, you know. And instead of peace, you know, it's about control, power, greed, and defense and attack.
Most of the time, when that's happening, There's no way that people can stop and like, well, let me just check on my ego right now. You know, that doesn't happen. Let me see, am I in drama mode? Am I unconscious? When you're unconscious, you're not going to ask yourself, am I unconscious? You know, and that's ego's playground. It's like, yeah, we're off and running, and there's no checks and balances.
Right.
And what happens is many times, and I do want to say that we have a caller on the line, and I'll leave the line open if the caller wants to jump in and say hello or anything.
Hello, thank you.
Hey, good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for the awesome conversation.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for being here. And I just want to add before we get into a little bit more discussion, he says on page 151, most people are in love with their particular life drama. Their story is their identity. The ego runs their life. They have their whole sense of self invested in it.
Right.
Mm. And
I'm sure you know a couple of people like that. I know a couple of people just jump right out at me.
Sure, and I know I've been there. You know, I would say not too long ago. I mean, not very recently, but not too long ago. And I'm saying that there was probably a time when, in the last 20 years, my story was, and my identification was that I was an action hero. That was my story. If you called me, no matter what time of day or night, I'd do my best to come to the rescue.
Okay.
You know, I was that way with my friends. And, you know, and that's how I had a sense of identity. That was my ego telling me I'm doing great things. Look at me.
Uh-huh.
You know, and my friends would call up and, hey, oh, hey, man, look, my car broke down. Can you come help me out? You know, and I was there. You know, and, of course, I didn't realize that that's what I thought I needed to do.
Uh-huh.
That was my own fear, actually, that the ego was living through. And it seemed like a very good thing. I was in love with that aspect. I was dependable. I was trustworthy. You know, I was Johnny on the spot. You know, and I could be those things and do those things and da-da-da-da, here I come to save the day, you know.
Uh-huh.
And it had good results. However, it was not the best thing for myself.
Uh-huh.
You know, where I was really putting myself out. You know, I'd come to somebody's aid at 3 a.m. and get up and be late for work.
Uh-huh.
You know, I had those experiences.
Right.
Where it didn't, you know, well, that's okay because I did something good. That was my story and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course that started to play out, and then I might catch a resentment here or there, like, what are you doing calling me at 2 a.m, you know, that kind of a thing, where all of a sudden it was no longer a love thing. You know, when the pain started to outweigh the pleasure.
Right. Now, that's key, what you just said, when it was no longer a love thing, because, you know, when we are loving and supportive and stuff like that, we get pleasure and we get energy out of helping other people. But when it becomes a drain or a strain or stressful and turns into anger and resentment, then we need to look at it. We're not providing enough self-care for ourselves if we are.
Uh-huh. At this time, we're going to invite our other contributor, and that would be Reverend Mwacha Rasuli. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes, welcome. So glad to have you. so joining us, everybody, is Mawata Rasuli. He is the senior minister at the San Francisco Center for Spiritual Living. He's a great friend and a wonderful mentor to myself and who knows countless others. And he has wonderful wit, charm, understanding, knowledge, wisdom, and he's here to share that with us today.
You forgot rich and good looking.
Yeah, did I leave out rich and good looking?
And extremely humble. And extremely
and
humble.
Extremely
my
humble.
Best quality is my humility. Sometimes
yes,
I'm indeed. So proud of my humility, I just can't stand it.
Yes. Well, I know that your humility allows you to let us know how humble you are.
If you see, not everybody is that humble. See, most
That's
people
right.
can't pull that off.
That's right.
Matter of fact, sometimes I'm walking down the street and I get stopped by total strangers just to comment on how amazing my humility is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sure it's well received.
I tell them to stop, but they just won't. Go on.
Oh, that is too cute.
That's the word, and pass it on.
Yeah.
It is. They insist on telling me how wonderful I am. Sometimes they tell me by getting on my nerves, so I have to dig deeper.
Uh-huh.
You know, they don't know. Maybe they don't know they're telling me. Maybe it doesn't look like they're telling me. But it's always an invitation to go into that place, so.
Uh-huh.
Might as well act like you've been told.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, because you have been.
Practice.
Practice. That's how you get to Carnegie, baby.
That's it. Yeah, so we were just commenting on this next paragraph, and we're still in Chapter 9. Beyond happiness and unhappiness, there is peace. I'm on page 151 in a hardcover. This paragraph starts off by saying, most people are in love with their particular life drama. And I know this is a bit summarizing because we covered it last time we were together, briefly. So we're just going over it again. And so he goes on to say that what they fear, well, that ego runs their life and their whole sense of self invested in it. What they fear and resist most is the end of their drama. As long as they are their mind, what they fear and resist most is their own awakening. And I think that it reminds me of, there was a quote, awake thou that sleepest.
Right, uh-huh.
I don't remember the whole quote, but it reminds me of this Star Trek. I think not Deep Space Nine, but there was another one after that.
The Next Generation. Mm-hmm.
No, it was after that, and it was one where they were so far away, and they were trying to get themselves back to at least a friendly quadrant of their part of the universe, known universe. And
that was Janeway.
Yes, that one. Well, there was a particular episode where they had gone into this energy field of a planet, which would automatically make them sleep. So the inhabitants of the planet, when they were sleeping, that was their normal way of being. Their sleeping and their dreams were like reality to them.
Uh-huh.
And the times when they were awake was not. And so the Voyager. It was the Voyager crew. So when the Voyager crew comes into this planet's atmosphere, they fall asleep, and the inhabitants come into their dreams and are controlling them. And what they found was that they could not wake themselves up from that dream space.
Uh-huh.
And if they remained there, then that they would be just sleeping out the rest of their lives. They would not wake up. And one of the crew members found that he could wake himself up. And as he did, he kept going through levels and levels of actually being asleep. And so even though he thought he was awake, he was actually still asleep, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I find that that's kind of like what it's like. Many of us who we're on this path and we're getting some enlightenment, we're waking up to greater and greater realization of the truth, but in some respects we're still asleep. You know, the ego still has its control, even though, like I mentioned, you know, I'm Johnny on the spot. I'm doing wonderful, great things, and I think I've awakened to, you know, to the truth of who I am, but I was actually still sleeping, and the ego still had me in the grip of, yes, even though I know I'm doing some good things, it was out of a fear base. It was out of fear of maybe not, I'm not going to be liked if I said no. Maybe if I, you know, if I didn't show up this one time, they would have no use for me. They'd say bad things about me, and then what would happen to my life?
Uh-huh.
You know, so I was still asleep, thinking that I was awake and doing wonderful things in the world for, you know, as the action hero.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's my experience with that, fearing and resisting my own awakening. And the ego had a hand in that, of course. It was like, no, just keep doing what we think is a good thing, and people will say only good things about you, and it'll seem like you're an enlightened being, doing things that an awakened one would do.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm free now, for the most part. I can say no.
You know,
have no fear.
There are different levels of awakening, and we don't just all of a sudden wake up to the full bloom of everything. And it would be too much of a shock to the system, you know, to truly, truly wake up 100%. And so it's a gradual, the grace is that we gradually wake up to see more and more. It's climbing that mountain. As you move up, you see a broader vista, you know. You don't just jump from the bottom to the top and one fell swoop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we grow, as we become more conscious and we grow more into our spiritual self and we can see better, we can see more, we can let stuff go. You know, I have this vision of the hot air balloon, you know, and so when you're in a hot air balloon, you know, they have weights and things in that hot air balloon to keep it at a certain level. And if you want to go higher, you have to dump your weights out. And as you dump your weights out, the balloon can rise higher and higher because the weight isn't holding us down. And so the same thing with life. As we are able to release some of our false beliefs and release some of our concepts and release some of the thoughts that we have about life, we can go higher and higher and higher into consciousness. But it's a process. It's not just, you know, a destination. It's a process. And I've learned that that is it. And I'm continuing to evolve and get more ahas and more insights and connect the dots better and see things from a broader perspective. It's
mm-hmm.
amazing. It really is, the journey itself.
Yeah. So let me ask. We're in the section, the end of your life drama. So before we move on, are there any other comments about this section, the end of your life drama? In a hardcover, I'm reading it's page 150 and 151. And he says, when you live in complete acceptance of what is, that is the end of all drama in your life. Nobody can even have an argument with you, no matter how hard he or she tries. So that's the last paragraph of that section. Anybody want to comment on any of that? Anybody anywhere?
That's the last paragraph of what?
That's the last paragraph of the end of your life drama section.
Okay. So you're all the way talking about where it says, of course, the miracles are when you're up at the beginning of the paragraph.
That part, right.
The beginning of that paragraph?
Yes.
I like where he says you cannot have an argument with a fully conscious person.
Mm-hmm.
An argument implies identification with your mind and a mental position, as well as resistance and reaction to the other person's position. The result is that the polar opposites become mutually energized. These are the mechanics of unconsciousness. You can still make your point clearly and firmly, but there will be no reactive force behind it, no defense or attack, so it won't turn into drama. When you are fully conscious, you cease to be in conflict. Well, there it is right there.
Mm-hmm.
When you're fully conscious, you cease to be in conflict. And no one is at one with himself can even conceive of conflict. Well, I like what they're saying. It means we got a ways to go if there's such a thing as getting there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
If you read the last sentence there, too, it says, this refers not only to the conflict with other people, but more fundamentally to the conflict within you, which ceases when there is no longer any clash between the demands and expectations of your mind and what is. And I think that's a critical piece, because we do have expectations of ourselves and others, and when we don't meet those expectations, or when other people fail to meet what our expectations are of them, then that in itself creates the clash, which creates the drama. You know, and so, again, coming to terms with what is, the person did or didn't do, hold on, okay, good. The person did or didn't do what we expected them to do. And some kind of way we have to come to be at peace with that, so that is not fuel for the fire, so to speak.
Yeah, quite
absolutely.
So. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I like this. It's a good, the end of your life drama. Well, that's all we got to do there, right there. It's laid out. I'd like a list of names of people who are actually doing this.
Well, you know, I tell you, it's a process, because I know last night I had to end some drama I was getting ready to get into with my daughter over what she was or wasn't doing in terms of the kids, right? And I saw myself getting ready to spin off on some things, and I decided, you know, take a deep breath, be quiet, and figure out what you're going to do. What is your proactive stance on this, rather than getting on her about what she wasn't doing? And so I did that. I totally switched it. And I just said, okay, all right, well, you know, we'll talk about this later. And then I turned it off, and I went in my room, and I thought about, okay, now what is it that I could do to resolve the situation so it wouldn't be a conflict? And I came with a wonderful plan. Then I told her about my plan, how we were going to handle the situation, and she was all for it. She's like, oh, that was good. I'm like, yeah, that's very good. And then that spurred her to thinking about some other things that she could do. And so the next day she told me about, well, you know, I thought about it, and this is what I can do. I'm like, great. So that, because I didn't engage in it, you know, I withdrew from that whole situation. There was no attack. She didn't have to go on defense. You know, because I saw that coming, and I just took myself out of that picture, defused the whole situation, and now we have a better plan than we would have had it been yelling and screaming at each other, you know?
Yeah.
It was great.
Well, my favorite part of this little passage here, this end of your life drama, I like this, what is the italicized in this first paragraph, the second paragraph where he says, the ego is the unobserved mind that runs your life when you are not present as the witnessing consciousness,
mm-hmm.
the watch.
Right.
That's just beautiful right there, succinct. The ego perceives itself as a separate fragment in a hostile universe with no real interconnection to any other being, surrounded by other egos which it sees as a potential threat or which it attempts to use for its own ends. The basic ego patterns are designed to combat its own deep-seated fear and sense of lack. They are resistance, control, power, greed, defense, attack. Some of the ego strategies are extremely clever, yet they never truly solve any of its problems, simply because the ego itself is the problem.
Right.
Well, I like what he's saying about, you know, what the ego is, but it has a purpose. You know, I don't want to see it as a problem. The problem is how we use the ego and let it run amok.
Right.
But if you let your 2-year-old run your house, the problem's not the 2-year-old. So I don't know if I'm going to agree that the problem is the ego, but the ego certainly is an active agent within what something we would call a problem. You know,
right.
I like how he describes it, but I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is the fact that we keep going unconscious. What is it about us that keeps bringing the ego into play?
Right.
You know, why do we keep going unconscious and stop observing and stop being the watcher? Okay, the ego's not making us stop being the watcher. It can't force us to surrender our power. So I would say whatever it is that forces us to do that or tricks us into doing that or causes us to do that, that's the opportunity right there. Instead of blaming the ego, saying, well, the problem is you have an ego. Well, ego's part of the game. It's like saying you have hunger pains, and that's a problem, in my opinion. You know, hunger is part of the physiology of the human body.
Right.
So, you know, ego is part of the makeup of a human being.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, when it comes to hunger, at some point, it gets satisfied. Now, you know, there may be people who have a disconnect who might always be feeling hungry, you know, and their lives are being run by hunger. And I kind of see ego in the same light. You know, ego's never satisfied. You know, what I teach a lot about ego is it's like that 2-year-old or the 3-year-old, you know, me, mine. And it's just going to do everything in its power to get whatever it sees, whatever it wants. That's what it wants to have, and doesn't matter. But I tell people, give the ego something to do. It does two things. One, it establishes a sense within you, okay, yeah, I am the boss. Okay, I'm giving this ego something. The ego's not running the show. I'm running the show. And the ego always wants something to do. Give it something to do. You know, it doesn't matter what. You know, okay, ego, let's see how good you can meditate. You know, it's up for the challenge. You know, it's like, or if you leave it by itself, it's not going to meditate. Ego, you know, is the doer. But if you give it something to do, then you're in control of it. And that's being more conscious, and you're watching. You know, but there are some people who just, like I used to just go outside, raise my finger up to the wind to see which direction I'm going to go in. I would just, ego, run amok. Okay, let's go. Doesn't matter what direction. So I think once we have the opportunity to realize that the ego is a tool, you know, like you said, it's a part of the function of being a human being, animal on the planet. You know, we have an ego, and we have the opportunity to be aware that we have an ego. And we also have the opportunity to know that we have a deep spiritual sense, and we can call it the watcher, that is at peace with itself and knows that it's the true power and is not in conflict with itself or anything, not even the ego, because the ego is in check. Ego, you know, doesn't have to think that it's all powerful, because it's got a job to do. It's being used right now. You know, it's when we give it the keys. It's like, okay, you drive. That's when we get in trouble. You know, however, what I think the main thing is, and it's like when I first came into religious science, science of mind and spirit, and I was told, you know, I was taught to keep track of, to watch my thoughts, to examine my beliefs. And that's like painstaking in the beginning. It's like, this is tiring. You know, this do I have to do this every moment? And that's like trying to watch a 2 or 3 year old. You know, you go to the park and you sit on the bench and they're running around all over the place. You know, you got to pay attention.
Yep.
Otherwise, they'll be up to all kind of stuff. And that's how it is observing the mind. So he says the ego is an unobserved mind that runs your life when you're not present. So that little kid running around all over the place, unobserved, is going to get into all kind of stuff. So I think it's...
You know,
it's,
you mentioned... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
You mentioned running amok. You're running amok. And see, the problem is the ego doesn't have a muck running license. Before we let it run amok, we need to teach it how a muck runs.
Yeah, right.
And if you teach an ego how a if you teach the ego how a muck runs, it will run it quite efficiently.
Yeah, well, it might.
Wants to do a good job.
Well, it does. But however, if it's operating most of the time out of fear, it's probably not going to turn out for the best for all.
Well, that's why I said you have to show it how a muck runs. A muck runs, it operates on faith, on consciousness. So you got to teach that ego that we're going to get what we want. And the ego is coachable. That's my issue with the conversation on the ego. I agree with everything he says.
Mm-hmm.
However, I don't agree with that the ego is somehow... To me, if you make the ego separate from us, then we've fallen into the same trap of separation. And so there can be no separation even of the ego. The ego has got to be part of the whole. So it's how we use it instead of allowing it to control us. It's what we do with it.
Well, right. That's absolutely true. I think the main point is, and I always ask this question even from the beginning of the book, how does one become the watcher or the observer when they have it, when... You know, you have to read the book, otherwise you're not even going to know that, you know, that you need to be the watcher or the observer. Before this, what did we know? We were run by an ego. It wasn't ego run amok. It was this ego running the show. You know, ego run amok is when we know that there's another way. That's how I see it. And somebody else might
tell
us.
Regardless, all I'm saying is ego just needs instructions. It was running the show.
Absolutely.
We need to show it how to run the show.
Right.
You know, because the ego is going to do what it's been programmed to do. And if you program it to protect, you know, then it's going to be the snarling Cocker Spaniel. You know
That's
what I'm
right.
saying?
That's right.
It's going to say, well, woof it, because it believes that's what it's supposed to do. And so for me, what I know is, when I got into my spiritual practice, I don't even know if my spiritual consciousness was even in the vehicle. It might have been getting drugged behind the vehicle. It just never got picked up at the stop. You know, and as I began to study and grow, you know, I kind of felt like at one point I was gagged and chained in the trunk of the car. I'm in the vehicle, but I'm not allowed to speak, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in the back seat right where, you know, the ego could beat me up for being stupid and believing all this crap, you know. But eventually I was riding shotgun, you know. Ego was still driving. But what I can see happen in my life, because I kept practicing and I keep practicing, and which is reprogramming the ego, eventually the ego surrendered the wheel. It's like, well, you drive. You seem to be getting everything we want. Everything we need is happening through this new consciousness thing you're doing. So let's see how you do. Like, you know, Dad gave the boy the wheel, and the kid outdrove Dad. So now Dad's like, son, I need to go to the store.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
I can't say that I'm 100% 24/7 that, but, I mean, there are times when I'm 100% 24/7 that. It's a
mm-hmm.
trick now is to keep your practice going, keep my practice going enough so that the gaps between when I'm able to do that and the times when I'm not doing that lessen and lessen and lessen. And I imagine, you know, certainly there are people that, you know, I guess Ishmael or Michael or somebody, probably for Ishmael for sure, with all the stuff he's doing with nature and all that, it's like, you, I guess if you practice enough, the practice that I do has gotten me this far, and I know that there's a lot more I could be doing. So anyway, I just think the ego is part of the whole and not separate from the whole.
Right.
And it can be used, you know, to assist us. Instead of, I don't think we should be fighting the ego.
No, we shouldn't be fighting the ego. And this is what Ernest Holmes talks about, ego and personality and stuff, that our ego is an expression of our individuality, which, you know, gives us the desires to want to contribute to the world and stuff like that and to do a good job at it. So it's not the ego itself. It's the uncontrolled ego. It's the ego without a purpose. It's the ego just trying to do what it wants to do. That's been dictated by the world, things that we've accepted, what we believe, and said, okay, I'm supposed to have a house on the hill with a $5 million in the bank and driving a Lexus or a BMW, or it's that equivalent thing. And so they have a pool in the backyard and this beautiful family, this beautiful life, and this beautiful husband and this beautiful wife, you know. And you got to work yourself to death to get it, you know, cheat people and all that other stuff to get it, because that's the end goal, and the ego doesn't care how you get it as long as you get it. But that's an uncontrolled ego. But when we start to control the ego and put some values there and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, but this is how we're going to do it, you know, then the ego can help guide you to get that. So it's not the ego, because we need the ego. The ego is part of our identification, but it's how we use it, like you said, that determines how effective we are. And if it's uncontrolled, it's like you talked about the two-year-old, they can run amok, but you can train that two-year-old, you know, to sit down
you
and,
sure
be
can.
And be
when
quiet.
We went,
can, and two-year-old.
When we went to Europe, we're seven of us, and we flew on the plane from New York to Germany, and one of the other sergeants on the plane had three children. And they were running up and down the plane and making all kinds of noise and annoying everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We were all sitting there. We didn't touch nothing. We didn't look at nothing. We didn't go anywhere. And it just, you know, talk about the, being trained, you know. And
right.
We were trained differently. And,
right.
You know, interesting. Yeah, I don't want to go too deep into that story, but I just remember that sequence on that plane. And here
right.
are our children on the plane, and some children are running all over the place, and others are behaving. That's, you know, the guys ask my dad, you know, how do you get your children to sit still like that, you know? And he's like, because I don't lie to my children. He says, you lie to yours. The guy got all mad. He said, well, what do you mean? He says, because when I tell my children sit down or I'm going to whoop your butt, they know that's what's going to happen. I have not lied to them. If I tell them I'm going to whip their butt, they know they got a butt whooping coming. He said, now you can threaten your children. They don't care. Because you lied.
Right.
You
right.
To say that. The guy wasn't happy with my dad. But, you know, it's like what I find is just like meditation. Trying to control the ego or get the monkey mind to stop doing what it does is an impossible task. But what you can do is as you observe yourself, if you observe the mind of the ego or the monkey mind, as you observe it, then you take your focus back to center, back to stillness, back to wholeness, back to God. And you don't ever have to teach the ego to do anything. It's when you observe it, have a plan. Oh, there he goes again. Let me go back to the center. Let me go back to breath. And
mm-hmm.
so at some point, the ego becomes an assistant to the spiritual growth, because it's like the dashboards, the red lights on the dashboard. You know, they all mean something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might mean, you know, your air conditioner is faulty. Well, you can keep driving. You're just going to be a little warm. You know, it's overheating. Well, you can keep driving, but you might need to look to put some coolant in there before it, you know, gets too hot and stops. You know, just different things. You're running out of gas. The oil light comes on, you pull over now.
Right.
You know? And sometimes, you know, like if you're in a rage, you know, the ego goes completely off the reservation. You know, you have to, you know, really, okay, let me focus on my breath here before I get myself in a situation. And you just allow the presentation of the ego to be the impetus or the reminder to go back to cause, go back to source. Now you're working in conjunction with the ego. It's not a bad thing. It's not doing anything wrong. You're actually giving it permission to do everything that it does naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just going to use the opportunity that as it does that, then this is what else I'm going to do instead. And so one of the things, this is one of the techniques I use. You said, how do you get yourself to, how do you control it? You don't try to control it. You allow it to do what it does and have a plan for what I'm going to do because it's doing that. And so, for me, that would help me develop this. I suggest everybody take a course in Vipassana meditation. And I always recommend a 10-day course. They have shorter courses, but if you want the full value, I suggest you do a 10-day course. And the whole course is about observation, becoming the watcher. Becoming the watcher. For 10 days, you practice observing yourself. And you become a pretty good observer just because you spent time practicing on how to do that. And so, but even if you don't do that meditation, which I would highly recommend, Vipassana is like one of the best things I ever did for myself. And it just helped me to I don't even want to call it stabilized, I don't even want to call it organized, but it gave me a plan in place for something to do when I realized I was unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of reminders to help me know when that is.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And I think many of us, and that is one great way to practice being in the stillness and becoming a watcher and an observer. What we're going to do right now is take a little segue, and I'm glad you mentioned meditation, because I'm going to share with you about something called the sound journey. Now, there's a sound journey that's being led by Vincent Lebrun. He's a dear friend of ours. He's a former musician of Creative Light Church and has certainly started off in the beginning of One Love Center. And the sound journey is taking place Sunday, June 8th at 7 p.m. What the sound journey is a guided meditation followed by a journey through sounds. The use of didgeridoos, Tibetan singing bowls, crystal bowls, keyboard, percussion instruments, and voice. You'll be lying down in deep relaxation, experience sounds and soothing vibrations, energizing presence and healing power. You are invited, each and every one who is in Brooklyn, New York, on June 8th at 7 p.m. You have to call in advance, 24-hour notice, to reserve your space. It's a $15 per person, 60-minute session. And the phone number is 917-378-9814. It's at 378 Green Avenue. The number again is 917-378-9814 at 378 Green Avenue in Brooklyn. So check it out. Vincent is a wonderful musician, a wonderful spirit on the planet, and it's a great meditation. Sound Journey, Sunday, June 8th at 7 p.m. And another announcement. It's a jazz celebration with the Chuck Fowler Trio, featuring Kobe Knight singer Paul Ramsey on bass and Larry Johnson on drums. Chuck Fowler is the keyboardist with the One Love Center, and he's an awesome jazz musician. You'll love his shows. He's performing Friday, June 6th. That's this coming Friday, June 6th, in Manhattan, in Harlem, New York. It's a $20 door fee. It's from 7 to 10 p.m. at Harlem on 5th. The venue is called Harlem on 5th. That's 132nd Street and 5th Avenue. If you live in Harlem, you'll call it 32nd and 5th. but it is. You'll call it 132nd Street and 5th Avenue. And if you want to make a reservation, you can call ahead to 212-234-5600. The number again to reserve, and it is not a huge space, so you may want to reserve a table. It's 212-234-5600. That's the Chuck Fowler Trio Jazz Celebration. Okay, now the last announcement is One Love Center. We meet on June 15th, the third Sunday. We meet the first and third Sunday of every month. We'll be meeting next on June 15th at 886 Pacific Street in Brooklyn. The featured speaker will be yours truly, Rodney Gittins, and the theme of the month is creativity. So we welcome you, invite you to come and participate in our Sunday celebration. We have wonderful music and just a wonderful time. It is a joy-filled celebration of love. All are welcome. Once again, we meet at 886 Pacific Street at 11:30 a.m. All are welcome. So, we are now back with the Power of Now, and we're going to move to the next section. And the next section is Impermanence and the Cycles of Life. And it's a pretty deep little section we have here. It will most likely carry us through, and we'll pick it up on our next show. He says, however, as long as you are in the physical dimension and linked to the collective human psyche, physical pain, although rare, is still possible. This is not to be confused with suffering, with mental, emotional pain. All suffering is ego-created and is due to resistance. Also, as long as you are in this dimension, you are still subject to its cyclical nature and to the law of impermanence of all things, but you no longer perceive this as bad. It just is. So that paragraph is pretty interesting. The first thought I have is, who's he speaking to? Because we must pretty much all be in this physical dimension if we're reading this book. And
well, you have a body.
You know,
you're in the physical dimension.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Yes. However, that's as far as
body.
We know. There could be
another.
Yeah.
If I can see you. my brother. My brother would... Maybe it was me. I'm going to tell the story about one of us would try to sneak and do things. And as long as, I think it was my brother, as long as he was backing up and looking at you, he thought you couldn't see he was doing
through. Right.
He wasn't here.
Yeah.
He's backing up. You see, you can't see me doing this because I'm looking at you.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah,
we're here.
So we are here, and as long as we're in this physical dimension, with I believe what he's saying is no longer any conflict, we will still experience physical pain. Not suffering, but we can experience physical pain, meaning that if we are a bit more aware and enlightened, we don't have to suffer, or we won't suffer, because suffering is mental, emotional pain, ego created due to resistance, and we're no longer resisting, so we're not going to be suffering. Does that make sense?
This makes enough sense. I tell you,
well, you know,
like
I look at suffering, I always get this example of suffering as, it reminds me of, I think it was Aesop's fable or somebody's fable, where the lion had a thorn in his paw.
Right.
Yes.
you know, and I kind of just kind of create my own story about it, but it's like having a thorn in your paw, and you just keep walking on it, and you go, ow, ow, ow. You know, it's like that doctor, you know, every time I drink tea, I have a pain in my eye, you know. It's like, well, you got to take the spoon out, you know, that kind of a thing. You know, it's like you got this thorn in your foot, but you keep walking on it. At some point, you have to get understanding. No, do not resist looking at what is causing you pain and causing you to suffer. You know, any resistance is going to create suffering, and suffering is pain that is continuous. And if we don't look at what's causing us pain, we're going to suffer. And so that's kind of like what this means to me. And we're going to call it bad because I'm suffering. It's bad. Well, when I no longer resist and I start to attend to what's causing me pain, which is the reason pain exists, is like like you said, the red light on the dashboard. It's getting my attention. It's letting me know that something needs attention. Once I do that, then I won't be suffering because I'll be able to do something about it. I can have that thorn removed from my paw.
Yes, some well-meaning, courageous mouse might just come along.
Right. And I promise, I won't eat you. I won't eat the mouse.
I always wonder about those birds that clean the crocodile's teeth. You know, who made that first agreement? What bird was courageous enough? And what crocodile was conscious enough? And
right.
A, the bird knew he wasn't going to be eaten. And the crocodile realized, you know what, if I let this bird pick this meat from between my teeth. Anyway, we're kind of off subject on that. I'm good at getting off subject. But what back on topic about suffering. You know, my favorite quote on suffering is from Buddhism, where they say the avoidance of pain is the beginning of all suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if we take that as a model, you know, based on, you know, what he's saying here, as long as you're in the physical dimension linked to the human, collective human psyche, physical pain, although rare, is still possible. It's not to be confused with suffering, with mental, emotional pain. All suffering is ego-created and is due to resistance. He's saying you're trying to resist something. You know, this is the avoidance. Avoidance and resistance are synonymous. And it's because we're in resistance mode or avoidance mode, we don't want to deal with the here and the now. We extend whatever pain that would have been temporary for as long as we're not doing what we are avoiding doing. So, I mean, the pain might have been a 5-year pain. But it took me 15 years to acknowledge, okay, I'm going to have to deal with this 5-year pain. So it wound up taking me 20 years of pain instead of 5. Or instead of 20 years instead of 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think the story that you talked about with the crocodile and the bird, you know, the crocodile's like, look, I wish I could get this bone out of my teeth, you know. I can't get the gristle out here, you know. And the bird's like, well, I'll get it for you, you know. It's like, if you don't eat me, you know, you ain't all my friends.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I can get it out. Really? So if you stop resisting and just let me do it, you know, we can have something here. You know, you know,
and you have great deal. You got a great dental plan. Let's see Obamacare top this.
You know, you can get to eat something bigger than me. You know what I'm saying? It's like you get a real meal. You know,
so you know, you can lay off the feathered Scooby snacks for a minute. I could clean your teeth.
Yeah, but you know what's so funny? If you think about it, eating that bird probably could have created the very problem it was trying to get rid of. You know, get some little bird bone and stuck in your tooth, you know? It's like, oh, I knew I shouldn't have ate that bird. Now how am I going to get this thing out of my tooth, you know? You know? So he had to do some serious surrender, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, that seems like, I guess I'm embellishing a bit there, but that's an awesome point. That's really what we need to do. How long do we choose to suffer? How long do we choose to be in resistance? I think it was Martin Buber, I'm not sure, who said the key to suffering is understanding. You know, and I think as soon as we begin to understand that we no longer have to suffer, you know, then, you know, the change begins to occur.
But, you know, it also goes back to the point where he talked about earlier about having expectations and the clash of expectations, because we suffer when our expectations aren't met. And so if we can release the judgment around the expectations and say, well, this, you know, something happened, so I'm going to now judge it good or bad based on my expectations. And two people can be in the same situation, experience the same thing. One will have a negative take on it, judge it bad, and another person would have a positive take on it and judge it good. So it's based on what our expectations are. So when we start to suffer, we can look at it and say, well, what were my expectations around here, around this particular person or around this particular situation? What was I expecting and what did I get? And once we look at that and say, okay, so I can change my expectations. I can look at what is and accept that as what is, but not as a commentary on its worth, is it good or bad, because later on down the line, it could have been the best thing that happened to you that you didn't get what you wanted or thought you needed to have or expected, and you got something better because you let that go.
Sure. And this is on the top of page 152. He says, through allowing the isness of all things, a deeper dimension underneath the play of opposites reveals itself to you as an abiding presence, an unchanging deep stillness, an uncaused joy beyond good and bad. This is the joy of being, the peace of God. And when we are not living in that expectation, we certainly do have peace, don't we?
Too.
Yeah, the peace of God. So on that note, we're going to leave off with the peace of God. So all those who are participating and listening, we are now in deep stillness and uncaused joy beyond good and bad. This is the joy of being, the peace of God. So we are leaving on that note, and we will return on that note when we return again. So, we welcome you to come back. Once again, we have Reverend Moata Rasuli. And please tell us where you are located and what you are up to. Please give us a minute. Go for it.
Well, we're at 280 Claremont Boulevard in San Francisco, California. And it's a place where love is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we're inclusive, including and inviting everyone to participate and to have equity, and it's a very close-knit, loving community, group of souls that come together every week for the purpose of growing their consciousness and being the light and being the love. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place and lifestyle.
Awesome. And at this time, thank you so much, and I hope anybody who's out there in the San Francisco, the Bay Area, gets over to experience all that love. And that is great.
Meditations at 10:30, service at 11.
Okay, very good. At this point, we want to say that Hajar Rahim will be headed out to the West Coast for her ministerial paneling. Is that correct? That's right. So she will be the next licensed minister in Brooklyn, New York, and we love you and we thank you for participating in the way that you have. And I know that the next time we get together and do this, you won't be the same. We'll be calling you Reverend Hajar Rahim.
Well, you know, it's not until week after next. I've been following week, the week of the 16th, when I fly out.
Where's Hajar being paneled?
In L.A.
In L.A.?
In L.A.,
wow,
yeah.
Well, congratulations, Rev.
Thank you.
And so it is. So I'm Randy Gittins, your host. This is One Love Center Presents. Peace, blessings, everyone.
Peace.
thank you for our listeners. Thank you, Princess. Thank you, everybody. That was great.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Love you guys. Hey, happy birthday, Rev. You know you ain't going back, man. That's okay.
Yeah. Did you give my group message?
Yes, I did. Thank you so much.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Mr. Magnificent.
Mr. Magnificent.
Yeah. Oh, did I leave out Magnificent? So.
Oh,
yep.
Robbie,
all right, then.
Are you going to Chuck's thing on Friday?
Say it again?
Are you going to Chuck's performance on Friday night?
Yeah, I believe so. Brenda, you going?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you'll have a good time. We had a very good time.
Yeah,
well, I want to go.
All right. Well, you want to ride with me?
Of course.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess I'll be picking up Brenda. You going to work on Friday?
I believe so. I'm not sure yet.
All right. Well,
okay,
we'll work it out.
That doesn't matter.
Must be nice. Decide whether I'm going to go. Don't know if I'm going to do to work or not. Haven't made up my mind.
Oh, well, you're invited. You can start come too.
I thought you hung up. I was like, are we still on the air?
No, we're not on the air any longer.
This is a heck of a radio show, man. You just talk about anything.
I got
to get me one of these, you know?
Yeah, right.
Up with that.
Well, we're not recording now, so that's a good thing.
We just talk about the laundry, you know, anything.
That's right. Yep. All right. So, yeah. Let me see. There's something else I was going to say.
I'm out.
All right. Well, I was going to say it to you, but I can't remember what it is.
Okay, I'll hang out then.
All right. No. You can hang out. You know, that's fine. But I can't think of what I was going to say. But.
All right. Well, when you think of it, give me a text.
Yep. Will do. When you come to New York, man.
You know when I'm coming to New York.
Yeah.
You know exactly where.
by the way, I would venture to guess that you'll be coming to New York for the big party celebration for Hajra Rahim.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be tough, though. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, not to be missed. Yeah. So
we have to work something out.
All right. Yes, indeed. All right. So
okay.
So Hajra, I'm extending the invitation to him right here, right now.
I heard.
All right.
When is that?
Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know. So after you pass, isn't there a formal graduation that's going to happen at somewhere in the planet?
I don't know. I know there's going to be something there at the site at that last day because we're going to be paneling on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Uh-huh.
And then this graduation or ritual giving up of the certificates and all that stuff on Friday.
Oh.
And it's then, but that's for us there. What people do back in their communities is a different thing.
So do you have a, what do they call that thing that goes around your neck? I'm looking right at mine.
A stole.
You don't get a stole till you're ordained.
Do you have a stole or a robe or something?
I don't know. I don't know don't. To tell you the truth.
No, you don't. They don't give you a stole aura. You buy your robe yourself, and your stole is given to you when you're ordained.
Well, we get a stole as a practitioner.
The center you're in gives you a stole because the center decided they're going to give their practitioner. There's an official practitioner stole?
No, not official, no.
Yeah,
I mean,
oh, okay.
Reverend Ian gave us one.
Okay, yeah. Reverend Ian gave his practitioners a stole because he wanted the practitioners at his center to wear stoles. Some practitioners, I got the biggest debate at my center right now. Well, it's not the biggest one because the people who want stoles are winning. But at one time, it was a big debate. It's one of those things where I show a great leader. What are you saying?
I found out that not all communities give out stoles to their practitioners.
Oh, I didn't know.
So yeah, not all
practitioners. Yeah, and that different communities pretty much design their own type stoles that they want to have. And I didn't know that. I thought we all just got them just because, and they came from home office, but that's not necessarily the case.
No, it's not. No, it doesn't come from
home. It's a local thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know about the stoles. I can ask Colette about that because I think they created their own stoles, the ministerial stoles for Colette and Eric when they became ministers and they had their installation ceremony. They did have a stole. But I don't know exactly how that worked, but I do remember them doing that because I was there. So that's something that can be found out about.
All right.
You know.
I'll look into that,
but
too.
It does not come from home office. That much I do know.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
So
you get to decide and design what all future world stoles at the center are going to look like. If you create a pattern now and say, this is these are our colors, you know, this is our, what do you call it, our crest.
Uh-huh.
Then
right.
That's what it'll be.
Exactly.
Right, that's
exactly.
Right.
That's what it becomes. It becomes your crest. And so you have to design it so it reflects your community and whatever your logo is and how you want it to look. Because that's what Amazing Grace did. They designed it according to their logo. And they spent some time in their community developing their logo as well.
All right.
So I'll
let you look at what I have and then we'll... And we can take it from there also.
Okay.
All right, good. So, yeah, I was going to ask you then, so you're not going to have any family out there?
In California?
To come to your graduation.
You know, I hadn't even thought about it. I do have family there, though.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, you know, I got family all over the place.
When is your graduation?
Four people there in my family in California. Yes, that's what. Say it again.
When is your graduation again?
It would be Friday the 21st, I believe. Whatever that Friday is from the 16th.
Okay, I'm going to actually. I think Friday must be the 19th.
Friday is the 20th.
Is the 20th?
Friday. Yeah.
I'm not gonna get down there for that because
okay.
I'm in Denver that day.
Okay.
Yeah, of course maybe I could fly out of Denver direct to LA. I mean there is that.
I do
sure would like to be there and see that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly how ceremonial it'll be. I'll ask them at the email. What does that look like? I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, so that would be something I could email and ask them what it's going to be, what that looks like. But, yeah. But the installation ceremony, you know, each community does their own.
Oh, yeah.
And they can look different, yeah. Yeah. So it was pretty nice when Colette and Eric did theirs. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the thought.
Oh, absolutely. Yep, yep. Well, all right, guys, I'm going to get some food. And, there's my friend. He has an online, I totally forgot to mention it, but he has an online, it's in an email, Yana CSL. Yana CSL. Yeah, he is the online church.
Okay.
That's his, what do you call that? His focus group? Well, it's his ministry. His online ministry. So he's the only one in religious science that has that. That has an internet church. So it's going on now. So, yeah, look in the email. Hit the link from the email. And YANA, You Are Not Alone, Center for Spiritual Living. That's a pretty cool idea. His name is Cliff Rubin, one of my classmates. He just graduated, or he will be soon. But yeah, so check it out. It starts at 8:30, so maybe you want to check it out. And Moata, you want to check it out?
Tonight at 8:30 my time?
No. It's now.
Oh, where is it?
It's on online, yanacsl.org, I think. And then you just gotta click and click and click to get into the room. You have a camera, right? Well, you don't need a camera, but you know, what they call it, a webcam?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to have one, but it helps because then they get to see you. You can see them without a camera, but, you know, with a camera, then they get to see you. So
maybe I'm not in a position to be seen.
You got to be walking backwards.
Yeah.
They can't see me.
They can't see me, man. I'm looking right at you. You can't see me moving backwards closer to the door. Trying to get close to the door, I'm scooting backwards, looking at her, you know. Yeah, you can't see me moving backwards.
Well, that reminds me of I was driving my sister's car by myself for the first time, and I got on the highway. And I said, I can't wait to use cruise control. And I put the cruise control on, and I took my hands off the wheel. So I figured the car is just going to go by itself.
That's automatic pilot.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that was pretty.
That was
soon,
pretty
Rodney, but not quite yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, who has a car that does that? Google or somebody.
Yeah, Google
has developed a car that can guide itself or drive itself.
But, you know, I'm looking at Yana right now, Yana Stories. I'm looking at the website, but I don't see anything that says tune in now. There's attitude, stories, about Yana. I'll go to about. Let's see what about says.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what that is.
Okay, it doesn't really say. It's just selling me stuff, how to sign up and learn more. But I don't see anything that says click here.
Let me see.
Maybe this is not the... It says Yana, you are not alone.
You see Enter Sanctuary?
No. I'm going to look for something else. Let's see.
Does it say... Oh, you know what? It's Yana... is YANAV... CSL, Yana Virtual Center. So it's YanaVCSL.org.
Okay.
Let me see.
I'm here. Now I got it now.
Oh, okay.
Who's this? Oh, this is the guy who graduates with you.
Yeah.
He's in your class.
Right.
He graduates this year.
How come I can't? Okay, just type your name in there.
Yeah. Okay, I got him.
Oh, there he is, yeah. That's his girlfriend in the bottom left-hand side.
I'm out, G.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to put my headphones on.
Okay. I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay, all
right. Right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm getting off the phone here.
What?
I'm getting off the phone. All right, man. Love you much. Thank you.